Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Option Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. And boy, is this a day for me to be ticked off. I am on a high soapbox. I am so more than ticked off. And we're going to be talking about it today. Somebody sent me something that says type 2 diabetes could be transmissible, and they talk about taking blood out of a mouse that had diabetes and putting it in a mouse without diabetes and giving the mouse diabetes and saying that diabetes is a prion disease, like mad cow. Now, think back when Gwen Olson was on our show. She said they taught her at the pharmaceutical company she worked for and got promoted to an instructor or something that by any means possible, get them on drugs as early as possible. So here are these people saying, we can have a vaccine. We can inoculate you against diabetes. Prion disease is like mad cow. You have to eat the meat or the blood. Now, do they think we're cannibals? How dumb do they think we are? 65 million people in the U.S., 65 million, an incredible amount of diabetes because of the crappy food we eat. I've been decoding three different things this week, and they all deal with vaccinations, and we're going to talk about it today, and we're going to spill the beans, but you have an announcement you need to make about our guest, or lack of guest.
We're having technical difficulties with the audio at Blog Talk Radio, and our guest was calling from the UK, and so we're going to reschedule once that gets fixed or solidified or we find the right channel, or I'm not sure what the right word is, but Carl Rozier Jones, the author of The Caveman Principles, will be back. That's what's scheduled today, but the UK connection was just not good. I'm not sure.
It might be one of those wires. Didn't Blog Talk have a problem with people calling, and it was bizarre. It was even bizarre when we were preparing for this show. Sometimes there were three or four of Richard, and it was driving me crazy. And it wasn't until seconds before the show that he actually just got one voice.
That's scary enough. One of me is more than enough. Three is like, woo, make me run for the room. I don't know exactly what's going on, but we will reschedule Carl. And today we're going to be talking about vaccinations and running some audio from the amazing documentary Vaxxed, which will be, it's such a great film. It's such a great documentary. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Go ahead.
There's just some incredibly brave people that have been out here beating the bushes and leading the way. Barbara Lo Fisher that we've had on the show, Stephanie Seneff, Sherry Tenpenny. We didn't have Diane Harper on, but we talked to about her. She's the one that led all the research on Gardasil that's in the news. Dr. Thompson, can't remember his first name, the one that spilled the beans about the MMR and how they had withheld information. And then Andrew Wakefield, which is one of the first bravest souls to come forward, lost his license, lost his practice in England. He finally was exonerated, but you don't hear that in the news. So that's what part of the Vaxxed is about, all of the bravery of these people coming forth. And then as my announcement, I'm going to tell you something to do about it. There's petitions, okay? That's a piece of paper. And I have talked to legislators, and they say they weigh it. They don't even read it. They weigh it, and then they pitch it, because a lot of those people who sign the petitions aren't eligible to be signing anything anyway. So we've been doing all of this research on Gardasil, and we've come up with some startling evidence. We've been doing research on the adjuvants in vaccines, and I think we've come up with at least one of the smoking guns that's causing autism. So we are doing a very special two-day technician workshop next week. It's the sponsor of this show from the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. It's going to be on August 10th and 11th, two full days, 10 to 4. We're going to give you access to the new research that I am doing now with Gardasil and give you a way to test yourself to see if you have been damaged by this totally infertility drug. I don't know who's pulling the strings, but if they kill off enough of us, there won't be anybody left to serve them dinner. So I don't know where they're going with this. But I'm ticked about it. The other thing that I think's incredible is we've looked at some of the things about Einstein's brain, and I've decoded some of the things that are different about his brain than anybody else's. So we're going to share that information with this August 10th and 11th class. And remember, guys, this is free. The software is free. This is a $1,200 course. And just because somebody, it's free and they think, oh, well, that's nothing. People, I have been doing without a salary for years, since 2013. So we can offer this to you for free. That is how dedicated I am to getting this to the people. Because after you watch this film we're going to show, you will realize how much you have been duped and managed, and you're seen as nothing but a bunch of cattle to be herded around and served up to the people in charge that I can't even figure out who is yet. Oh, okay, I'll get off my soapbox.
Oh, good, I'll step up. Excellent. I hate it when we fight over the soapbox. I'm going to remind people before I get on the soapbox, because mine is in a different venue, but it's still, the bottom line is pretty much the same of, you know, profit versus, oh, the planet, you know, that old planet where we all only live. So before I do that, I'll remind everybody that about 10 to 15 minutes after we end the show, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio archive player, where you will find the last five shows, and you'll find the audio to this show shortly thereafter. And you can also go to any of your podcast aggregators of your choice and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll find our now over 540 shows, I think. And that means iTunes or Pocket Cast or Stitcher. Stitcher's a good one because it's cross-platform, works on everything. And it's easy to send people a show that if you like a show, you can just email it to them right from the app. It's really, I like it for that a lot. So now, once I've said that, I'll climb back on the soapbox. And the title of this article is, and I'll put this in chat, Scott Walker's Foxconn deal waives all environmental regulations and permits. So Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, has pulled together a deal where he's going to put the people of Wisconsin on the hook for $3 billion in tax credits to the Taiwanese company Foxconn. Foxconn, you probably have heard the name because they're the manufacturer of the iPhone in China. So they're a huge company, and they're trying to do this as part of the bring, you know, business to jobs to America. So part of the game here is that Scott Walker is saying that he wants to commit his state to giving over over $3 billion in tax credits to Foxconn for coming to Wisconsin, and that he wants to have them, he is putting directly in the bill that he wants to waive all the environmental restrictions. So I'll read this a short paragraph. Environmental groups are among those with reasons not to like this plan. It would allow Foxconn, without permits, meaning that they do not need require permits. That's how he's written it. They do not need permits to discharge dredged materials, fill wetlands, change the course of streams, which then dump into other real streams, build their own artificial bodies of water that connect with natural waterways, and build on a riverbed or lakebed. Foxconn would also be exempt from having to create a state environmental impact statement, something required for much smaller projects. Now, Foxconn has been gotten in trouble or been noted that they've had issues, particularly they're under the spotlight a lot because they are the manufacturer of the iPhones, that they've been polluters in China. Now, if you're talking about polluting in China, that's you got to be pretty amazing at it because China has a lot of pollution in it. Manufacturing, probably because of just issues like this where somebody said, oh, it's worth us having jobs and income and the tax revenues from a company, so we don't care about the environment. Really? Now, that's it. Just it goes to the, you know, what Sherry's going to talk more about, and then we're going to listen to in the great documentary Vaxxed, is everything seems to be the only thing that's important is the bottom line, whereas in the instance of what Walker wants to do with Foxconn, and looks like he's going to get to pull off so far, nobody's stopping him, is sure, more pollution into the ocean, more pollution to the streams. It doesn't matter. It's all about the money. But the problem is down the stream, literally in this case, there are going to be people who are probably going to be immunosuppressed or have health issues because of the, ooh, almost said a bad word, stuff that's going to be put into the streams. We don't know. Why should this company be allowed to pollute, like, openly? I mean, we have enough pollution by lying, but this is just, yeah, go ahead, pollute. So I'll put that in chat. That's the end of my rant, maybe. Go ahead, Sherry.
Well, we want to introduce the movie Vaxxed. Because we think it's incredibly important. Jeff Hayes has offered it out for free, and we can put that link. Oh, there's no chat. We'll put that link on the radio site. But this talks about his work and the work in America and about our future. We don't have time to play it all. That's why we want to give you the link. And it's only up for, what, another 24 hours? Where you can watch
so.
It all,
and
it's,
so.
And it's worth
it.
Several times. I've watched it several times, and I still get something new out of it each time. But it's a warning, and it's especially a warning right now about Gardasil. Gardasil has four different issues with it, or four different versions, and they've just put up a new version. The old versions all dealt with infertility, and we can prove that bioacoustically. The new ones looks like they're going after creating cancer in people, and that's probably a killable offense for saying that. But we are going to put this up on our portal. Actually, it's up right now, Sound Health. Portal.com, and you go in and test yourself against Gardasil, but I have just decoded the new one, the HPV-9, and we will have that up at the beginning of the week. So if you want to wait, because I think they only allow you to do it once, but I also think they allow you to have it for the month if you sign up to be an apprentice. I don't own the portal. I don't make the rules. I get a little bit of say, but I'm not sure how all that works. So Gardasil is a shot that Diane Harper investigated, Gardasil and Cervarix, and she says it should not be given to anybody under 15 years of age, and it's for cervical warts, and that it does not prevent cancer. They mandated it in Texas. So many girls were maimed and killed. They unmandated it, whatever that word is, and then did an investigation and found out that one of Perry's aides Governor Perry at the time, had been paid off, or at least that's what was in the news. Now it's a law in California. I haven't seen any statistics about how many people have died or been maimed from it, but I didn't look them up either. I did see that about 34% of the people who were been given the shots and were pregnant aborted. So I don't know what the reason behind it is. I don't want to be paranoid. I just want to provide antidotes to the public in case we're all forced into it, which is what Obamacare was trying to do in the first place. So we may go over a little bit today, but we will give you information about how to go back and listen and hear it all.
Richard?
One of the primary voices that you'll hear is Andrew Wakefield, who has been, well, I'll start this so that we can get going, but I'll put show notes in the chat, and we'll put in the links to where to see the rest of the film. Here we go.
In California, the worst measles outbreak in 15 years is spreading.
The virus is roaring back into the headlines tonight. An outbreak somehow traced to
someone who had probably caught measles abroad, visited Disneyland, and may have sneezed.
Measles on the march in America.
This outbreak is showing no signs of letting up. There are already more cases this year than there
the
were.
The number tripled to 644 measles cases reported in 27 states.
And I mean, is this all basically because of the anti-vaccination movement? Because parents aren't vaccinating their kids?
Yeah, you know, I think so.
A bill that would ban exemptions from childhood vaccines is advancing through the California legislature.
We are authoring legislation that will abolish the personal belief exemption.
I think you're starting to see why it is that mandates are so important.
There has been some inaccurate information circulating about vaccines, mostly stemming from a British study linking vaccines to autism.
We still continue to hear that vaccine caused autism, even though that's been debunked.
Repeatedly and thoroughly debunked.
The bill requiring children to be vaccinated has passed with bipartisan support. Every child must meet immunization standards before joining public schools, private schools, and daycares.
I would strongly encourage everybody, look at the science, look at the facts. CDC, the Center for Disease Control, can give you good information. Get your children vaccinated.
I have waited a long time to tell my story, and I want to tell it truthfully. I was involved in deceiving millions of taxpayers regarding the potential negative side effects of vaccines. We lied about the scientific findings. The CDC can no longer be trusted to do vaccine safety work. Can't be trusted to be transparent. The CDC can't be trusted to police itself. Just a few thoughts. William W. Thompson, Senior Scientist, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hello?
I was sitting at my desk where I teach at Simpson University. My phone rings, and it's Dr. William Thompson.
Brian, you and I don't know each other very well. I don't know how this is all going to play out. You have a son with autism, and I have great shame now when I meet families with kids with autism, because I have been part of the problem.
My son, Stephen, was born in February of 1998.
Steve, what does the cow say?
Tweet, tweet.
Doggy.
Doggy.
Yeah.
2 weeks after his 15-month vaccines, then he lost all language. He lost all eye contact. You'd pick him up and he would just hang limp. This is a time where CDC was just starting to do these studies on vaccines and autism. As a scientist, I have over 60 technical and scientific publications in major international scientific journals, and I was contacting the CDC and was deeply critical of their studies. And so the CDC decided that the scientist who was going to interface with me at that time was Dr. William Thompson.
because I was on his back, because he didn't like what I was saying about the statistics.
I received a letter from a CDC attorney in 2004 saying that I was no longer permitted to contact the CDC. Fast forwarding to 2014, Thompson said to me, Brian, if you listen to me and if you do what I tell you to do, I can guarantee you will be able to access a treasure trove of data, and I would like to guide you through these steps.
So I want to be a resource. I want to be valuable to you. I want you to have someone in the system.
For years, I had been trying to crack this edifice of the CDC and just getting little glimpses of what was not right.
The CDC has put the research 10 years behind. Because the CDC has not been transparent, we've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now by anything related to autism.
I am a licensed clinical psychologist and a board certified behavior analyst. In 1978, I want to say the prevalence of autism was about 1 in 15,000 children. It was a very rare disorder. I was working at a clinic at UCLA, which was pretty much the only known center for treating children with autism, and we had maybe 6 to 10 children who we were working with. Somewhere around the early 90s, shortly after I opened CARD, the growth of autism has been so high and so rapid that I've never felt like I could ever catch up anymore. From a official diagnostic perspective, the way that we define autism, we're looking at deficits in two areas. The first is social communication and social interaction. And in that area, we require 3 specific symptoms to be present. Symptoms such as no social emotional reciprocity, no nonverbal communication, that means eye contact, for instance, or no development of relationships. The second required area of deficit is the presence of stereotypic, repetitive, restricted behaviors. And these are things like hand flapping, body rocking, insistence on routines being the same. One of the new additions is the presence of a sensory dysregulation. If a child has an inability to sense things correctly, not necessarily hearing things the way we do, that could be classified as a symptom of autism. So if you have 5 symptoms, 2 in the area of repetitive behaviors and 3 in the area of social communication deficit, then you will get a classification of what's called autism spectrum disorder, ASD.
We begin, though, as always, keeping them honest. Breaking news tonight, just hours ago, the British medical journal BMJ did something extremely rare for a scientific journal. It accused a researcher, Andrew Wakefield, of outright fraud.
I got a call on the 19th of May, 1995, from a mother telling me the story of her child, his regression into autism following a vaccine. And I said, how can I help you? I know nothing about autism. You've come through to the wrong number. And she said, no, doctor, my child has terrible gastrointestinal issues, and no one will take them seriously. I was an academic gastroenterologist doing research with a particular interest in Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, inflammatory bowel disease. I knew nothing whatsoever about autism. When I was at medical school, it was so rare, we weren't taught about it. We heard a succession of stories which were very, very similar. Medicine is about pattern recognition, and there was a clear pattern emerging. So we decided, a group of us, including the world's leading pediatric gastroenterologists at the time, led by Professor John Walker Smith, decided that these children merited thorough investigation.
Well, Dr. Wakefield has been shown used absolutely fraudulent data. He created a fake paper. The journal allowed it to run. All the other studies were done, showed no connection whatsoever again and again and again. So it's an absolute lie that has killed thousands of kids.
And what we discovered and reported for the first time was this link between what appeared to be a novel type of intestinal inflammation and autistic regression in previously developmentally normal children. And among those, the majority had regressed into autism, according to their parents, following the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. It wasn't our place to censor their story because it may be uncomfortable for public health. Our job was to report that story accurately in order that it might lead to further investigation. And the paper explicitly said, this paper does not prove an association between MMR vaccine and the syndrome described. More work is needed to resolve this issue. That was the conclusion of the paper.
As an investigative medical journalist, I've spent the last 7 years working on one of the best medical talk shows in the world. We know in medicine that there have been many, many studies proving that vaccines do not cause autism. But the problem I have always had with that is thousands and thousands of parents all telling the same story. My child got a vaccine, usually the MMR vaccine, and then that night or the next day broke out in a fever. And then when they came out of the fever, lost speech, lost the ability to walk, basically regressed into what we know as autism, and never came back. Doctors used to be told to listen to their patient. That was the cornerstone of medicine as we know it. But something's changed recently where the patient doesn't know what they're talking about. And these parents, with their story of their children, have just been written off as though they have no idea what's really going on with their child. I have two kids. And anyone that has children knows that when we first have babies, we are overly sensitive to every little hiccup, every cough, every sniffle. So to say that a parent was just unaware that their child had issues, and suddenly they realized 1 year later that, oh, they have autism, that doesn't make sense to me. And so I wanted to look into this story and find out, what is this disconnect between medicine, science, and real parents?
I couldn't wait to be a mum. I remember specifically, before we even got married, talking about how important children would be in our lives.
I wanted a daughter first, then I wanted a son. And we were planning on having four children.
We were going to be the most perfect parents that we could be.
Bella was born, and that was a wonderful experience.
Bella was just this angelic, perfect child. She'd hit all her milestones. I got pregnant with Billy quite quickly.
Bella, say hello to Billy.
Hello.
We've now got a beautiful girl and a beautiful boy. Life was just amazing. So at 2, 4, and 6 months, Billy had his normal baby vaccine. A little bit snivelly, chesty, coldy after maybe the last one. So me, in my perfect mother mode, rushed to the doctor. I mean, is he okay? Do I need to give him anything? Yes, you need to give him antibiotics, just to make sure there's not an infection in there. It didn't clear up. Rushing back to the doctor, we need more antibiotics. Let's just keep this going in him. And I remember my mother calling me up. My mother's a sort of homeopathic hippie. And calling me up saying, what are you doing? You're chucking loads of antibiotics down your son. For what? And I remember saying to her, Mum, with all due respect, you're an artist. And they're doctors. So they know best. He was due his MMR vaccination at 12 months. So the morning, exactly to the day, my friend, she said to me, listen, I've heard that there may be a problem with this vaccine we're about to take Billy for, the MMR. And I said, are you crazy? What is the matter with you? If there was a problem with vaccination, it would be headline news. The doctor would be calling me up saying, do not bother coming in. This is not a safe vaccine. None of that is happening. You're being negative, you're being careless, and you're listening to what? Some rumor that you heard somewhere. Billy could become deaf if I don't take him in now and get him to MMR.
You know, most of the evidence linking measles with autism is kind of settled down, and most of the doctors and scientists agree that it probably isn't the major cause.
I've been working in pediatrics for almost 20 years. I think most pediatricians view vaccines as they're the number one thing they do for kids.
Okay, bye. There we go. And a high one.
All right.
All right. Okay.
I'm young enough to not remember the days of kids in an iron lung because they were battling polio. You know, polio has essentially been eradicated from this country. In 98, the Wakefield study came out. My son had just been born. That study kind of pointed a finger at the MMR. As a parent, I was scared to give the MMR to my son. And as a matter of fact, I didn't give it to him on time. because I wanted to see. I wanted to see what additional studies would show. And over time, additional studies did show that, no, it's safe. And so he did get the vaccine. You know, if everybody stopped vaccinating, we'd be going back to the dark ages.
When a CDC scientist who'd been there at that time 17 years tells you this is how you access data, it didn't take me very long to realize, oh, I better do what he says because he knows what he's talking about.
I just want to tell you one thing. Right now, I'm sitting in a very pretty position in terms of providing you a lot of information.
He asked me, what data sets are you going to request? And I said, well, I'm going to request two of the studies that you've done on Tamiflu, the mercury-containing preservative that's used in some of the vaccines. And he said, well, that's fine, but I want you to request the MMR data set first. And this is the study by Frank DiStefano and his colleagues in 2004.
It was the one study where we could end up creating a mess while the CDC tried to sort out something they couldn't understand.
The day Billy got the MMR was a living nightmare. It was the worst day of my life, to be honest with you.
I came in and I saw him lying in his cot, listless. He started this uncontrollable shaking. Imagine coming out of a frozen pond.
His eyes were doing this and he was shaking like this.
And I remember she grasped him and held him really tight to her chest.
There's immediate fear in John and there's immediate, mummy, this is not going to happen. Well, I don't know what is wrong with you, but this is not going to happen. And we get to hospital, we rush him in, doctors are coming in and looking at him. And that's when they said, he's had a reaction, he's had a seizure, this is normal, this is common for many, many children who have this vaccination. It's absolutely okay, he's going to be fine. Nobody ever told me that there would be any side effects from any of the vaccinations my children had.
Following his febrile convulsion that he had the same day of the MMR, we were told to take him home.
He slept in the bed with us for the night. He seemed just very, very sleepy. In fact, he didn't really ever wake up to the Billy that we had before.
For me, it became really necessary to start looking at what types of medical issues are these children going through? What are the other factors that have affected them, that have brought them to this level of symptomology that we call autism? This is now probably the mid-90s. I came to notice that there was a very high use of antibiotics amongst these children. But B, what became pretty interesting was seeing the number of families who were reporting that their child had a regressive type of behavior occur right after their vaccinations. So a lot of these parents were showing me footage of their children who had been completely developing normally until 18 months, and then all of a sudden post-vaccination had developed incredible regression. Children who had speech anywhere close to 50 to 100 words and had completely lost all of their words. Children who were extremely attached and interactive with their parents and had suddenly become isolated, no longer responding to their own name. And this was all happening right after their MMR vaccine.
My oldest son, Ian, was born normal, developing normally. He was this beautiful boy, and we ended up at our 12-month visit, which is his 1 year. Then they gave him multiple vaccines at once. And within 7 days, he had a 104 fever and a rash all over his body. He had previously been noted in our videos, home videos, that he was walking and actually running at that point. 7 days after the vaccine, he was no longer able to do that. He was falling down. He became a really sick, sick little boy.
So the question for those of us investigating autism is age of exposure to MMR a risk for autism? And in order to understand why that might be, you have to understand something of the history of MMR vaccine. In 1987, there was an MMR vaccine that was being used in Canada, produced by SmithKline Beecham. And that vaccine caused meningitis. It was recognized quickly, and that vaccine was withdrawn in Canada. However, in the same month that it was withdrawn in Ontario, it was licensed in the UK. The name was simply changed from Trivirix to Pluserix. In the UK, it was used for 4 years, and likewise, it caused meningitis and had to be rapidly withdrawn. There was a public outcry. There was an acute loss of confidence by the public in vaccine policymakers, and the vaccine should, at that point, have been destroyed. It wasn't. It was then shipped to developing countries like Brazil, where it was used in a mass vaccination campaign. And there was an epidemic of meningitis, which was entirely predictable. Now, scientists studied that epidemic, and what they found is that the risk for meningitis was associated with age of exposure. The younger you got the MMR vaccine, the greater the risk of meningitis. For people like me investigating autism, the question was, is there a similar risk in autism? Is age of exposure to MMR a risk for autism just as it was for meningitis? We shared with the US Congress and the CDC the hypothesis.
The story as told to us, which we have an obligation to report, is that the majority of children regressed following a period of normal development in the face of MMR vaccination. That does not mean it is the cause of the disease.
The Institute of Medicine is a body of scientists and physicians that review the available data on vaccine safety and then advise our government on vaccine research policy. Well, because Andy Wakefield had put forth this theory that the age at which you receive the MMR may increase your risk of autism, the IOM looked to the CDC to do that very study. It was a study about timing. Does the earlier you receive the MMR vaccine increase the risk of autism?
When we talk about the MMR study, nobody had ever requested those data because it was a big secret that you could do it. Thompson told me to email such and such a person. And then on the inside, I also found out that one of the people preparing these data sets for me was Bill Thompson.
They don't really want people to know that this data exists again. Mm-hmm. You know, I just can't believe we actually got you that data.
Thompson couldn't send these documents directly to Brian Hooker because that would have been illegal. What Thompson identified was a legal loophole that is referred to as a citizen's request. That allowed Thompson to deliver to Brian Hooker potentially classified information in a legal way.
You get checked in England with your babies at certain times by health visitors. So at 9 months, Billy had his full-blown check, and it says no parental concerns, baby laughing, babbling, talking. So we passed that with flying colors. 18 months is when they next come in. And by this time, we know there's something seriously wrong with Billy.
Probably within 5 or 6 days, the first signs really was this vacancy. He wasn't the same smiley little baby that he was before. He had a blank expression. Then the diarrhea kicked in.
His tummy started to get bigger and bigger, bloated, rock-hard bloated tummy. He would start to walk on tiptoes. His hair fell out in this dreadful, high-pitched scream, sort of whiny scream developed from him, and then came the head banging, the constant banging against his crib, the constant banging against the floor or a wall or anything that he could find to bang his head on. He would thrash it and thrash it. John and I would lie in bed at night just listening to this thud, thud, thud.
Thud.
There's nothing. He's now not even noticing his sister, who he used to play with. John comes through the front door after work. No recognition that we were his parents or this child even belonged to us. Nothing. Nothing. Gone.
I mean, that was the time where our boy changed from what he was to a real tragic, tragic case of a child who regressed into this autistic state and lost everything. Lost everything.
The CDC, the way that they do research studies is very reactionary. They look at something that's creating a press and creating a buzz that could actually lower vaccination rates, and that's what they study. They don't study vaccines proactively. So if Andy had never done his original study, gotten that published in The Lancet, would have never created the uproar that rightfully it should have created, then the CDC would have never studied this.
The press conference for the Lancet paper was called by the dean of the medical school, who was the chairman of the media committee.
Temporal association between MMR and autism was initially made in the United States.
I had done an extensive research into measles vaccine safety and MMR vaccine safety in the pre-licensing phase. In other words, what safety studies had been done before these vaccines were put onto the market and into children. And the 250-page report was compiled by me showing that the vaccine safety studies for MMR in particular were lamentable. They were lamentable. There are many, many assumptions have been made about the safety of this vaccine. And there had been problems which had been airbrushed. So I wrote to my colleagues and the dean and I said, going forward, there are going to be questions about what parents should do next. I cannot, in due conscience, support the continued use of the MMR vaccine, having done this research. I said I will continue to vigorously support the use of the single vaccine, but can no longer support the use of the triple MMR vaccine. So the dean, as chairman of that committee, had three choices. He could have not had a press conference. He could have banned me from the press conference. Or when the question came up, as inevitably it would, what do parents do next about vaccinating their children? He knew what my response would be. He could deflect the question to someone else. When the question came up on the day, he directed it straight to me.
To assure you, we are not at all so accepting the need for measles vaccination, but we are all freedom. That is important.
All I recommended at that press conference was that parents opt for the use of the single vaccines, single measles, single mumps, single rubella, until the issue had been resolved scientifically. What happened when I made that recommendation? Unilateral decisions were made by the government in the UK to withdraw the importation license for the single vaccines, Merck opting in the US to cease the production of the single vaccines, giving parents no option. I said to a senior representative of the Department of Health, why, if your objective is to protect children against serious infectious disease, why would you take away the option of how parents do that? And she said, because if we allowed parents the choice of single vaccines, it would destroy our MMR program. In other words, the concern was for the protection of the program over and above the protection of children.
No one's career has ever been advanced in the medical industrial complex by being outwardly and openly critical of the vaccine industry. I'm Mark Blaxwell, father of a daughter diagnosed with autism back in 1998. I've written two books that have come out of the autism movement, have been projected into autism advocacy ever since. Michaela was born typical, everything was fine, was developing normally through her first birthday. We have vivid memories of early language, joint attention, lots of play. She was adorable, beautiful, cute. And then somewhere in the months after, she began to slip away and she lost language and she began to retreat into a world of her own. And at 2 years, 9 months, we got a formal diagnosis of a full syndrome autism. It was a hopeless, pessimistic future that was laid out in front of us. She was going to be disabled for the rest of her life, likely to be non-vocal in an institution, and that the best thing we could do was to accept the inevitable. Part of the story we heard from the Harvard experts was autism was genetic. It was low and relatively constant prevalence. the more I learned, the more clear was that that whole orthodox view was false, completely false. Revolutions only happen in science when there is an anomaly that the old orthodoxy can't explain. With autism, the anomaly was the explosion in cases, which meant that what people were trying to describe as a genetic, neurologically based condition couldn't be genetic. It could only be environmental. It could only be some set of things that had happened to children. And you had to ask the question, what might it have been?
One of my personal training clients was the director of programs for LWT, London Weekend Television.
And this guy said, why don't you do a program, and people out there, there may be someone out there with this condition.
He said, this is going to be an unbelievable story.
But we've got nothing to lose. Right now, this child is either going to kill himself because he's going to smash his head to pieces, or we are going to go insane because everybody here is miserable.
And that program was aired, and we received 250,000 email hits.
Computers were kind of new then, the whole internet computer thing. Ours crashed. We'd set up a Billy Tommy website just in case somebody, one person might be able to help us. Crashed. The television station's computers crashed. They had never seen anything like this before. The parents had exactly the same story as us. Antibiotics, some with chicken pox a lot. Vaccine, bang, the symptoms were all the same. The diarrhea, the constipation, the high pitch scream, the banging of the head. We've all lived through it, it's the same story.
And it was Polly's idea to put all of this stuff together in a magazine called Autism File.
Let's all ask the questions and maybe someone can help.
These questions from these parents were not being answered by the doctors that they went to see. They came to us out of desperation, and we had 45,000 subscribers within 4 months.
When I originally got the MMR autism data, I came up with my own analysis plan, and I stepped through logically and systematically how the data should have been approached. I looked first of all at males versus females. Then I looked at black males. The relative risk of them receiving an autism diagnosis was astronomical, and it was highly statistically significant. I really had to scratch my head and say, I know nothing about the MMR vaccine. And so that's when I originally called Andy.
Wow. Really? After everything that had happened, everything we'd all been through, everything that the families had suffered for the last 15 years, and the CDC had known all along there was this MMR autism risk.
As I started to divulge more of the conversations, then I think it really hit him that this was a major crack in the wall of the CDC.
The first thing that Thompson did was to plot a graph of percentage of children vaccinated against age at first MMR vaccination. The children with autism are represented by the pink line, the children without autism by the blue line. Now, if there's no link between early MMR and autism, those two lines should track together, whatever the age at first MMR. Now, they do track together until they get to 15 months, and then they separate, and they continue to separate thereafter. This was their first indication that MMR vaccine was causing autism. And that finding alone rocked Thompson back on his heels.
This was a huge issue for Andy.
So I said to Brian, Brian, are you recording these conversations?
Recording phone conversations was not really palatable to me. It almost seemed cruel.
Whistleblowers can disappear as easily as they came. They're like a fish on a hook. And your job is to get them into the boat.
Temple walked at 12 months, so he had been walking for an entire month before we went in for the next set of vaccinations. And the minute we walked into the pediatric office, Lou, his twin, she's screaming her head off. I mean, she knows what's going on. She doesn't want the doctor touching her. I look up, and there she's got the shots lined up. Three for him, three for her. By the second shot, Lucinda had flipped herself over. So I had to stop looking at what I was doing, unstrap her, get her out. Well, the minute I get her out and I calm her down a little bit and I look over, he's screaming. I look at the shots and I notice that one of hers was gone. There are only two shots left for her. And I asked the nurse practitioner, I said, what happened to that other shot? She says, oh my goodness, I gave it to him. I said, which one was it? She said, it was the other MMR. I said, call the doctor. This baby is screaming his head off. You've given him an extra shot. I don't know what the effects of that's going to be. We're leaving. And I left. So she never got her shots. I go home. This baby cried. I put him down on his little blanket. He starts banging his head on the floor. Next morning, I go in his room. And he's staring in the space. And he's looking around like this. As if, you know, he's a bit paralyzed. Not the baby who was always doing this every morning, smiling for me to get him out of bed. And I pick him up, and he does this. And I said, what has happened to my baby? So I call the clinic, and I said, I think my child's had adverse reaction to those shots yesterday. She says, no. I'm waiting for a representative from Merck. I don't think it was a reaction to that.
Bill Thompson looked at African Americans. He saw that those African Americans that got the MMR on time were 2.64 times more likely to get an autism diagnosis than those African Americans that received the MMR after 3 years of age.
What this was suggesting is that among the blacks, the ones that were getting vaccinated earlier were more likely to have autism.
At that point, the group of researchers that was working on this particular study, they were having weekly meetings. Colleen Boyle, who was the head of developmental disabilities branch, and Marsha Lynn Jurgen Alsop, who was one of Thompson's direct supervisors, Frank DiStefano, who was the head of the Immunization Safety Office, and then a postdoctoral research associate named Tanya Basin. In that meeting, Thompson brought up the fact that African Americans were showing a highly statistically significant risk of autism if they got the MMR on time.
What is said in these closed-door meetings? I mean, do people say, oh, well, this is unacceptable, or is it just, do they always say, oh, this can't be right, or?
I'm not going to lie, but I also don't want to say things to you right now that aren't some written form.
Right.
The analysis regarding the African Americans was the 8 on the Richter scale earthquake that just shook through the CDC.
I take him to see the pediatrician that I know. And she looks at me, she closes the door, and she whispers, she says, Sheila, I believe he has autism. I said, what? Like Rain Man? She says, something like that. So I'm going to refer you out to a neurologist. And we go see the neurologist the next week. He says, he has every classical symptom of autism. I do not believe this. I was angry. When he was explaining to me what Canis autism is, he told me he was born that way. I said, no, he wasn't.
Clearly, there was a very high risk of autism in African-American children. But here's the thing. We know that autism is 4 times more common in boys. And so to see that effect mirrored in the African-American children was a compelling finding.
When I looked at African-American males only, the relative risk was 3.36. It just blew my mind. And that's when I wanted to call Bill Thompson on the phone. And his statement to me was, oh, you found it.
It appears in the final publication is that race in general is downplayed.
Of course it is.
Temple's twin is amazing. She is fluent in 3 languages. She speaks French like a native. She is an A student. She plays classical piano. With all of the guilt that I feel from that day, one of the best decisions I made for her was to walk out of that office without her being vaccinated. At the end of this journey, I don't want to be one of those mothers standing there saying what I wish I would have, could have, should have done. I want to be able to say I gave it everything that I had. I gave it my best shot. His twin is going into the 11th grade. And for someone who still can't manage to cross the street, now am I grateful he's here? You bet. I'm grateful my son lived. But I was so naive that he would live a fulfilling life. He would end up being a happy man, having a family. It's my dream for him. And every year that goes by, the older my son gets, the further that dream seems to be.
All about vaccines!
So what do vaccines do?
Vaccines build up your immune system and make you stronger to fight off disease.
Are vaccines safe?
Yes. Studies involving millions of children have shown no connection between vaccines and autism.
Stick to the schedule!
The CDC's own vaccine schedule, which we are required to adhere to as parents in America, recommends that our children get the MMR between 12 and 18 months. But in this hidden data provided to us by William Thompson, it is clear that for African Americans, this is actually the most dangerous time to deliver the MMR.
The CDC, in my opinion, is one of the, it's where I go to if I need information about an infectious disease. I probably either go on their website or open one of their reference books every day. That building is filled with a lot of scientists that are smarter than me.
The analysis plan is one of the most important parts of a scientific study. It's the laws or the rules by which the scientist will adhere to while doing the study. And this analysis plan is put together by the scientists themselves. Sometimes their superiors weigh in. But once they've locked that analysis plan, they've said, this is how we're going to use the data. And you can't deviate from that analysis plan, or you're at risk of fraud, scientific fraud. Did they deviate from the analysis plan after seeing something that they didn't like? If they did, we have a real problem.
Thompson not only played a major role in developing the analysis plan, he was the numbers guy. He was responsible for collecting the data, analyzing the data, and presenting the results. And by November 2001, the results were in.
Now, with the MMR autism one, we had an analysis plan that we were supposed to execute as was written. And, I'm going to be sharing these draft analysis plans that we had, and you can see whether we did what we said we're going to do.
That analysis plan had been agreed upon not only by the co-authors, but also CDC superiors.
In order to conceal the effect of the MMR, what they had to do was to reduce the number of children in the study in order to reduce what is referred to as the statistical power. That is, the ability of the study to detect a difference if one genuinely exists. In the analysis plan, they had agreed to use two sources of information. The first was the children's school records, and the second was the children's Georgia birth certificate records. So while every child in the study had a school record, only half of the children in the study had a Georgia birth certificate record because the other half had been born in other states. So the analysis plan was explicit. Information on a child's race was to come from their school record.
But when confronted by data that revealed an increased risk of autism in African-American children,
so they deviated from their analysis plan. They chose to get the race data not from the school record, but from the Georgia birth certificate record.
Instead of having 3,000 individuals in the study, it went down to about 1,800. The relative risk went down from 2.64 to 1.8, but more importantly, that relative risk was no longer statistically significant.
I now ask you to step forward to receive your prize from the hands of His Majesty the King.
I am Rick Montagnier, MD. I am a virologist by training. I obtained the Nobel Prize for my contribution to the discovery of the AIDS virus. the vaccine-autism interaction is a worldwide problem, not only in this country, in Europe, but also in Asia, even in Africa. The MMR vaccination, in a very early stage of infancy, before the age of two, was more prominent in Afro-American children, and this was hidden for some time. This fraud, of course, ranks very high, to my opinion, in the ethics of medicine science. CDC in the past has done a very important work on the discovery of AIDS, so I'm very disappointed to see a different situation with CDC dealing with autism.
Shortly after Julie Gerberding became head of the CDC, I began to communicate with her and ask her to come to my office. There didn't seem to be objective research going on. There was the CDC trying to promote vaccination for children, and then they were doing the safety research themselves.
In CDC's judgment, the best public policy is to continue vaccination unchanged while aggressively working to try to identify causes of developmental disabilities.
The CDC, I just thought, was institutionally conflicted.
The CDC can't take money directly from pharma, but they can set up a foundation, and the foundation can attract donations from commercial interests, and does. Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, now Pfizer, Sanofi, Aventis have huge multi-billion dollar vaccine businesses. They're profitable. They've grown because some of these new high-tech vaccines that are patented, that are high-priced, get protected by this little cocoon of regulatory capture in HHS. And are guaranteed multi-billion dollar franchises.
When I was working at Merck, I was the sales rep for Vioxx. The whole scandal started when it was discovered that Merck had manipulated data and covered up the fact that Vioxx actually caused twice the amount of heart attacks and strokes than the placebo. What I learned from that experience was just because things are on the market does not mean they are safe. I think we get into a very dangerous territory with vaccinations. If a drug company gets just one vaccine added to the schedule, they can make upwards of $30 billion in 1 year.
It's no secret. I think they've published their intention, which is they want to create an environment of constant vaccination from cradle to grave. They want infant vaccines, expanded flu shots, DTaP boosters, Gardasil shots, meningococcal shots. They want adult vaccines. They want you and me to come in and get a constant barrage of shots. And then they want vaccines for the elderly.
We have a highly profitable product because the safety testing isn't as rigorous as a normal pharmaceutical drug. The gold standard is double-blind, placebo-based, long-term.
I really hope that you go into the complete movie video of this. It's incredibly important. The key word here is invested. Not a lot of people know that the CDC creates these drugs with the pharmaceutical companies and partially owns the patents, and that the CDC, which is a privately owned organization, enormously profits from what they are mandating through the government, through Obamacare. 2020, we're all going to be required, and it's no exemption for medical or religious exemptions. It's everybody. And we are scrambling to provide you the antidotes. I just put some of them up on our website, soundhealthoptions.com. Please go to the soundhealthportal.com, and the link is there also on our website, and get your voice bioacoustically tested against Gardasil, and I will get the rest of this, the HPV-9, up as soon as possible. Power to the people. Health for the people. Dominion over your health by the people. Health responsibilities by the people, the government, the CDC, Obamacare, Big Pharma are royally screwing us, and we have to put a stop to it. Thank you for joining us. This has been a whirlwind show. Trying to put it together, we will have more information. As we get it, we'll send it on to you immediately through the portal.
And I put in chat, you can go to vaxedthemovie.com where you can see the rest of the movie. And or you can also, if you have a Prime account with Amazon, you can see the movie for free using your Prime account. So it's available, it's around, and if I find any more links, I'll put them in the show notes. Otherwise, we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.